Good morning, congregation.
Good morning.
It's really an honor. I want to thank the Reverend Cleveland, and I want to thank my brother in faith and spirit and humanity, my brother Eric Lawson, for the honor to chat with you today. I pray that the Lord guides my words, my thoughts, my heart. Indeed, this is really special. Normally, I speak to fellow environmentalists, scientists, scholars, academic, many of you, some of you may know that I'm a retired epidemiologist, 36 years from the Health Department of the State of New York. And even in that field of, again, serving humanity through science, through COVID, we always can find that joy. I want to also give a little bit of the land tribute with regards to the First Nations, the Mohawk Nations, upon whose land we all worship, but also from the forced nations, people who were enslaved to build the roads and build the foundations of not only our democracy, but even our economic system we call capitalism. I descend from the second, and interestingly, I find myself at a very deep, as they say, poignant crossover, because my ancestors, though enslaved in the Blue Ridge Mountains of South Carolina, they were the enslaved five-star staff of the Caesar's Head Resort, which catered to naturalists in the mid-19th century. We have our rituals and our traditions. To this day, we always hold our family reunions on our homelands that we, A, were enslaved on, but also still had to be stewards of, because, as they say, the social safety net was not until the late 20th century that we realized we should take care of our fellow Americans and our fellow man and to learn to share the bounty of that, which is America. But my ancestors had to live in harmony with the land so that they could provide for generation after generation. They realized through their, A, educating and being the field guides for those who were studying the flora and fauna, their deep knowledge of the flora and fauna was essential for preserving themselves for generations and posterity. And it's from that spirit that I anchor a lot of what I do and how I do. I grew up in the Hudson Highlands, born and raised in Peekskill, New York, large family of nine. And even though son of a World War II vet, that was the then, I think, Hello Dolly, they called Yonkers, the country. So if you imagine living in Peekskill, that was Siberia. But my father, a boy from Harlem, raised his family of nine. And at that time, being in harmony with the land and just, again, living off of nature's bounty, I just never knew until the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act in college, my consumption of PCBs, because we, during the seasons and the cycles, as was your traditions, we would go out and get shad and herring and salt pack them in 50-gallon drum barrels. And our family subsisted off that, as well as small game hunting, as well as deer. That's how, in supplementing my father's income, he fed the nine of us. And so we lived always from nature's bounty. And so with that, always a deep regard for the lands. Again, it was mentioned a little bit of some of my travels, my work. The reason why I retired into this space is because many of you heard about 10 years ago, we're facing that existential crisis due to our stewardship of this planet. And that existential crisis is that of anthropogenic climate change and all of the impacts on all of the ecosystems upon which we all depend. We talk about the cycles, and we talk about how does our faith communicate to this and how do these things connect. Well, the user manual for our planet, the user manual spiritually that we rely upon is the book of Genesis, am I right? Because many people think of the book of Genesis as just the book of creation, that you read it and you pass it off. But that book gives us not only an ordering of the times and the orderings of the seasons, but the ordering of all creation. What came first? And within that creation, again, flora came first. Our trees, our plants. Naturally, the first thing that came was water, right? Water is something that's very essential and critical to all creation, right? And before life could move from that water, what moved upon the water? The Lord's Spirit. Water is powerful and a sacred symbol in the book of Genesis, both literally and allegorically. Allegorically in the sense that, you know, as a scientist, we talk about systems, processes, and we study, you know, samples, etc. But, you know, in mathematics, we talk about fractals, and sometimes things are, as I say, microcosms of repeated patterns and of repeated systems. And so is creation, water begetting life, being the foundation of life upon which we all hold sacred, but also which we are all, as we talk about the headwaters of the womb, of the mothers, you know, that we are born within these waters, and that this is very, very critical and essential to our lives. And yet, from that, we get the flora and the fauna, which all derive and depend upon that water. Man does not come around until like the fifth day, mankind, our creation. And we learn later in the book of Genesis that our role is that of steward of this planet, steward of this creation. Yes, we live off and in harmony with, we're part of the cycle of birth, growth, decay, nourishment, renew, to birth again. Many talk about death as a loss. No, death is part of that cycle. And we talk about rejoice and returning, but it's part of that renewal pattern that we see hope in that story, in that allegory of Genesis. And I'm really humbled and pleased and honored to be here in the sense that your message on the environment and lifting up the environment, lifting up creation is foundational to our Sunday worship, but to all creation. This is the essential. It's being mindful of what our role as stewards are. I'm honored to be the Wilderness Campaign Director, and the reason why I stepped into that role, why I retired from the hard science to protect flora and fauna, because we are at that switch in which we had, as they say, about 10 years ago, we were warned that the serious effects of anthropogenic climate change that threatens all creation is at hand. So I moved from my field to the field of the environment to, again, to alert, to agitate, to move, to inspire, hopefully, those of us, at least even in the fields of faith, but all parts of creation must step up and, as they say, and engage. Yes, I was arrested. I was arrested for standing up for democracy, justice, equity. I was arrested for being woke, right? You know, that's one that goes back to the book of Genesis, consciousness, being aware, stewards of creation. And yet, even in that Garden of Eden, we had our serpents, right? Telling you what to eat, when to go to sleep, drain the swamp, right? And it's very powerful, right? Think about it. The swamp, metaphorically and allegorically connected to the book of Genesis, is that mechanism. Because again, if the Lord creates waters and all things are living, we have these systems of, as I say, of life, decay, renewal. And the swamps or the wetlands are part of that very powerful spiritual example, or as they say, evidence in that book of Genesis, right? It is the swamp that takes the decay. It is the swamp that takes the surface runoff from all that we do on earth and does what? Miracle. Purifies it. From the swamp, from the wetlands, we get clean air. From the wetlands, we get clean water. From the solids of the wetlands, as they flow and wash upon the shores and wash upon the land, we get improved, as I say, enriched in nutrients within the soil. We use that for our crops. The swamps, the wetlands, are critical foundations of creation. And so when mankind, borrowing on that allegory, sees himself listening to the serpent that says, drain it, then what will clean the refuse of mankind? What will clean the refuse of creation? What will purify the waters, right? If we drain that. We stick our hand and say that we know what is best, because if we drain that, we can get more valuable land. You know, we can, as I say, put some fertilizer on that, grow some grass, and put a golf course in, put a nice subdivision in. And know that other stuff that's connected to it, that's drying, those trees that are now dying, we can clear cut those and put more subdivisions. But then we start to notice that there are other collateral impacts, because now we broke up that harmony. We break through that allegory, that metaphor, that continuity, that connection, that renewal. And we realize now that, oh, we built these things, but now there's no water to water that 18-hole golf course. There's no water, no clean water coming out of the pipes in our nice subdivision and condominiums. We lost sight of the whole cycle and ecological connection, all these things, for the short-term gain, for the short-term gain of what we, mankind, deemed as profitable. These metaphorical and allegorical wetlands also map to, again, as a subsystem, how we communicate, how we connect as a civil society, how we regulate things. When we talk about the political swamp as we relate it to real swamps and the impacts on human ecology, the same thing is happening to our political ecological wetlands and discourse. As we drain the sanity, as we drain the science, as we drain the passion and love and care for one another, the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the familyhood, the universality of all man and humankind. As we drain all those things, as we drain those values out and leave behind a perceived notion of what a great America is, the center of all things, as I say, the center of the political world. As we drain that sanity, we realize we also destroy the very beauty of, again, that metaphor, the allegorical wetland. It's not a swamp. A swamp is a developer's term. A swamp is a corporate term. A swamp is a term used to say something is of lesser value. And it preys upon those who don't know and don't understand what is valuable. Now, you come here Sunday morning and recharge your soul because you learn again through song, through hymn, through prayer, through reflection, through communityhood, through connection, the value of this spiritual wetland. This is not a swamp. This is not a swamp. In fact, if it is, I enjoy it. This is, again, renewing that soul, cleaning out the toxins of the week, of the day, as I say, flushing out those things and restoring one's vitality, restoring one to go out into the world, to do what a healthy, recharged soul should do. So too with our democracy. Our democracy, like the spiritual wetlands of the book of Genesis, are essential because it is the political system by which we take in all the mess that is our ideas and who think we do, you know, that we think we know better, that we are better stewards. It is through the politics that we bring in the scientists, the information, the knowledge, and yes, even the ignorant. And we hope that within that process of our political wetlands, we ultimately, through those processes, as we evolve and learn, and as they say, discover our humanity, we break things down to that which nourishes us all. We try to filter out those toxins that try to divide us, exclude us, tell us what is American, what is un-American, who is a citizen, who isn't a citizen, who's a human, who isn't a human, who's a male, who's a female. We have that political system there. It's not perfect. It's messy. It's a wetland. It's not a swamp. It's not a swamp to be drained, to be broken. Because when you drain it, again, just like with a wetland, the processes that God has given you to break things down, to purify and give us this wonderful creation. Once we lose that, by the way, that connectivity, we lose that which can sustain us. We lose our democracy. We lose our civil society. We lose the beacon of that journey. If we engage in political processes that tell us to forget the past, yes, we will be doomed to repeat again. If we engage those voices that tell us to destroy books or what the curriculum is because somebody is uncomfortable with the stink that comes from the wetlands, yes. Did I tell you that wetlands have interesting odors, textures, messes? Intentional. In our book of Genesis, you see why, right? Because it is part of the pattern that renews life and renews our soul. So too with our democracy. Our nation is an ecological wetland. It's about 250 years old. And we have evolved to higher heights. We have endured sexism, homophobia, genocide, people, enslaving of people. We have risen to a place and space where we recognize the universality and the good of all humankind. As a result of that inclusion, we brought scientists and people from all around the world, and we've come up with the means by which we can, at this dark hour, save humanity and save creation. But the resistance must be against those who say we must drain our political wetlands. We must leave it over to the corporate developers of our wetlands so they can drill, baby, drill and make profit. For whom and at the expense of whom? For what and at the expense of what? Humanity over all creation? We must reflect upon this great gift of Genesis and the allegory that it gives us, in that from the wetlands, all sacred life is maintained and renewed. From the wetlands, if we restore them, if we, as they say, we work to, as they say, make them productive again, we may have the hope in saving humanity from humanity. This is us having a conversation with us. It is the woke having a conversation with those and trying to wake those who are asleep. And yes, hatred is a form of sleep. Racism is a form of sleep. Sexism is a form of sleep. Consumerism is a form of sleep. Pursuit of mammon, wealth at the expense of all others, is a form of sleep. We must call on that deeper spirit. We must call upon the voice of the Lord and the power in it. As his voice moves upon the waters, let it move upon the waters within our hearts, that we may speak up and lift our voices to wake humankind. For the hour is nigh. We are aware of a coming of an end. We don't know what day, but we do know that if we continue to burn all the fossil fuels for the sake of fossil fools, all humanity will pass. The earth will be fine. Let me be clear. The Lord has created this miracle. We are still part of that cycle. We are still part of that spiritual, metaphorical, and allegorical wetland. And like the dinosaur, we will become the fertilizer in creation, in the purification and the restoration of what needs to be. The choice is for humanity to decide whether it will persist, whether it will, as a species, rise with wisdom from this wetland, with more knowledge and more power, more love for one another, more love for creation, more love
for life. If you love life, you must love the wetland. We must resist against the corporate interests that say drain it, the political interests that say drain it, and all the tactics and tools that they elevate, thinking that they will be great again. There was never an again. There's just evolution. I don't want to go back to what we evolved from. None of us do. We are better than that. Let us evolve into the stewards that we need to be and that we must be.